We begin things this week with a look at a ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court this past Thursday, which was of great interest to not just millions across the country, but hundreds of thousands right here in New Jersey who subscribe to the subsidiary aspect of Obamacare. In fact, the structure of that program subsidies in New Jersey and dozens of other states was the crux of the case, which was before the court. My first guest today is here with her analysis of this ruling, its impact, and what next regarding Obamacare and the battle against it. She is the president, CEO, and Thomas W. Smith Fellow in Healthcare Studies at the Pacific Research Institute, writes for Forbes.com, author of a series of books, most recently, The Cure for Obamacare, Sally Pipes. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning.
And PacificResearch.org is the website for the Pacific Research Institute. The ruling was interesting. Well, first of all, it came out on a Thursday. Everyone was expecting it to be the last Monday of the month, which was a surprise. The case, of course, was King versus Burwell. And I guess one of the key phrases from the majority opinion was as follows. The Affordable Care Act contains more than a few examples of inartful drafting. This is Chief Justice Roberts writing for the majority. Given that the text is ambiguous, we must turn to the broader structure of the act to determine the meaning, and specifically that Section 1311 of the law, which says the federal government will give subsidies to eligible consumers who buy insurance from an exchange established by the state, which in, as I mentioned, New Jersey and 34 other states, mechanically that wasn't the case. So I guess Justice Roberts and the majority believe that the Affordable Care Act is, I guess, a living and breathing document.
Well, it was a very disappointing decision. It was 6-3, and Justice Roberts, once again, was part of the majority. You know, he was the Chief Justice back in 2012 when the Supreme Court upheld the constitutionality of Obamacare saying that the individual mandate was constitutional under Congress's power to tax. Now we've had this decision. The case was really a straightforward meaning interpretation of the law case. And as you just said, the law specifically said in exchanges established by the state. Now, 34 states did not establish their own exchanges. And I think that was very surprising to the president, the administration, and to John Gruber, who has, you know, said a lot of odd things as an architect of Obamacare. But it really, I mean, Justice Scalia said in his dissenting opinion that the court has changed the usual rules of statutory interpretation for the sake of the Affordable Care Act. So it was very clear, and for Justice Roberts to, you know, not stand up to the actual meaning of the law established by the state was, as I say, very disappointing.
Was this ruling the only way that the Supreme Court could have gone to make their first ruling, their previous ruling on Obamacare, stand as legitimate and not be re-questioned?
Well, I think that the issue, the Republicans, you know, were in a bit of a quandary. They were in a bind, really, because there was a division within the Republican Party over whether, you know, whether they would support, if the court ruled that the subsidies for these people were illegal, how would they deal with it? Would they support, say, Senator Johnson's provision, Senator Sass, to extend the subsidies for a certain period of time, perhaps through mid-2017? And then the other side of the divide was that a number of Republicans, including Senators Rand Paul, Cruz, Budget Chairman of the House, Dr. Tom Price, they didn't want any extension of the subsidies. So it was really, you know, I think in a way this decision was probably better for the Republicans. Now they can decide, are we going to, you know, move forward to 2016? Are we going to really work to repeal and replace and get a president elected who believes in repeal and replacement, or are we just going to lie down and say, you know, this is another example, the president has won, it's the law, the Affordable Care Act is the law of the land. So that is the big quandary for them. I'm hoping, of course, that they're going to stand up and say, the healthcare law is flawed, the American people are still 54% in favor of repeal and replace, the American people are also facing higher premiums, higher deductibles, limited networks of doctors and hospitals. The employer mandate has reduced job growth. So there are a lot of problems with the law. So, and it really needs to be repealed and replaced with a law that really empowers doctors and patients, not the federal government. And so there's a number of plans out there from the Republicans. They need to rally around one plan, stand up for it, and push forward and explain to the American people what their plan would do to bring about affordable, accessible, quality care.
Well, Sally Pipes, who is the President, CEO, and Thomas W. Smith Fellow in Healthcare Studies at the Pacific Research Institute, writes for Forbes, also an author. Most recent book, The Cure for Obamacare, pacificresearch.org on the web. And you're listening to Issues and Ideas. Let's turn that around slightly, Sally. If the Republicans, after, let's be generous and say, 5 years of opportunity to craft a single plan, instead of having this continued battle and works in progress, if there was a plan that Republicans together all stood up and said, this is the alternative to Obamacare, do you think the Supreme Court would have had a different ruling?
I actually was disappointed that the Republicans did not come up with what their plan would be before the court ruled. And on Fox News Sunday with Chris Wallace a couple of weeks ago, Representative Paul Ryan said they were not going to come up with their plan. I think it was a mistake, because I think if the court and then the justices had seen what the Republicans' plan was and that they were rallying around it, they might have been more friendly towards a decision that ruled that the subsidies, in fact, were illegal, because the law was very clear when it says established by the state. So for me, that was a disappointment. I think it was a tactical error. I don't know why they're so skittish about this. I mean, you know, it was a big issue.
Now, ironically, and you wrote about this recently as well, the means by which Obamacare came into existence, reconciliation, is a path that the GOP could possibly take to eliminate Obamacare.
Well, yes, both Senator Mitch McConnell and Speaker John Boehner have said they've been saying for a long time they're going to pursue budget reconciliation. I think now Dr. Tom Price says there's no reason not to. So I think they probably will now go forward with budget reconciliation, and that it would, if the Senate, they only need 51 votes in the Senate, the Republicans, in order to pass the budget reconciliation. So I think that is definitely a possibility, because Republicans have control of the House and the Senate. The President, of course, has said publicly that if a reconciliation bill comes to his desk for signature, he will veto it. But I think it will show the American people that the Republicans are dedicated to repeal and replace of Obamacare. And this is just the start before they really get into the race for 2016. And there's going to be, I mean, I think already there are about 13 Republican candidates in the race. They better all have a position and a united position on what they will do on health care reform, so that the ultimate candidate can say, this is our plan, this is what we're going to do for the American people.
Ironically, the next big name to about jump in to the race coming up on Tuesday is New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, who openly accepted the Obamacare money.
Yes, exactly. I think that a lot of states accepted Obamacare money. I mean, if you look at California, where I'm from, covered California. California was the first state to take the federal funds. We've seen a number of the states that are running their own exchanges, those 16 states in the District of Columbia. There are a lot of financial problems, website problems. And so states such as Hawaii, Oregon, New Mexico, they have all, stopped operating their own exchanges and pushed over to healthcare.gov. And I think that federal exchange, so I think now with this ruling, they're probably going to be pretty pleased they did with it. California, Peter Lee, who's the executive director, has said that they're way short on the enrollments that they had forecast for Covered California. The money from the feds, this was the last year, 2015. So it's going to be, it's financially, it's a problem going forward for Covered California to survive. So now with this ruling, they may say, well, we're going to go over to the healthcare.gov as well. So it's there's a lot of interesting things about to unfold following this decision. But the law is flawed. On my side, from my perspective, having filed an amicus brief in the case back on March 4th at the hearing, I think, there's a lot going on. We have to really push forward. We lost a battle, but the war for the repeal and replacement of Obamacare is not over.
And while the news media has been boasting about polls that say that a slim majority are now in favor of Obamacare, Talk to the people who did not qualify for the subsidies and who are now paying more for their health care coverage than before with the free market system, and see how much of a fan they are. And as the federal funds start to get lighter and lighter for the state assistance and Obamacare money, just see how much more unaffordable affordable health care will become in the probably sooner versus later. We've been joined this morning by the president, CEO, and Thomas W. Smith Fellow in Healthcare Studies at the Pacific Research Institute, writes for Forbes, and author, including The Cure for Obamacare, Sally Pipe. Sally, thanks so much for your insight this morning.
Thank you for having me on.